Welcome, bienvenue, to the Fantasy Tools Podcast. This is a show where fantasy tools discuss fantasy tools. I'm your host, Eric Rentz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Michael Peterson. Our mission is to discuss fantasy baseball and the tools that we're developing that help us manage our teams. Cue that intro music. This was at the top of the X feed. Lehigh baseball. I mean, look at this. Another Patriot League standout in the MLB. I didn't know that more than one was allowed.
I mean, legitimately, how did this content come across your transom?
I don't know. They must have figured it. X algorithms must have figured it out. Did you? I just saw it and I was like, wow, Lehigh baseball. So what is this kid's name? Hang
on. Yeah, what is this guy's name? Because I want to look
Mason. Up. Of course his name is Mason. Mason Black. Mason. Oh.
Is he in? He is. He's in TGFBI. He is. His ADP this year, actually, 490. So he was picked in. What? He was picked in top, some leagues.
Top 500, barely. Well, so we can't have Mason Black start this week.
After a long discussion that is not going to make it into the pod, we determined that you cannot own Mason Black in TGFBI right now.
Cool. That's unfortunate.
Too bad.
Well, let's see. In Triple A, 24-year-old, 9.79K per 9, 2.7 walks per 9, 0.34 home runs per 9, BABIP of 246. Where is he playing? Is he playing in the Pacific Coast League? Because that would be impressive. I don't know what league this is. Well, good luck to Mason Black.
That's all there is to say.
Patriot League pride. May the 4th. There's a lot of... I don't really like the MLB doing the May the 4th stuff.
Do you... Well, I mean, it's just another example of the corporatization of Star Wars, right?
And the MLB. Yeah. Both of them are going in there.
The MLB has been corporatizing for a long time. But yeah.
What? It's more than just the games played that matter.
You shared an image of Gunnar Henderson's bat, and my first reaction is that's legal.
I don't know. Did he actually swing that thing in a game?
I don't know. I feel like that just shouldn't be legal.
Yeah, I don't think that.
I worry that if that's legal, you're going to end up in some sort of arms race for like best coating on a wooden bat.
Didn't they have pink bats?
I don't know what they do. I don't know. But yeah, but maybe they have one official pink paint that they can use or something.
Yeah. That looks really shiny. It looks like a metal bat.
I know. That was my first thought, too. I was like, what? No. All right.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyways, May the 4th be with you. And then now this Revenge of the 5th.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of the Tales from the Empire?
You're skipping ahead. I watched one and I was like, first reaction, unhappy that it's Morgan Elsbeth. I don't
care. I saw that and was really frustrated.
I don't care about Morgan Elsbeth.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Yeah.
This is the most compelling story that they can come up with right now. And they've titled something Tales of the Empire. And the most interesting thing they can come up with is a battle where General Grievous kills Morgan Elspeth's mom. I'm like, okay, cool.
Which, I saw that and I was like, okay, I really have no reason to watch this. Clearly didn't happen during the Empire.
Yeah, so they're calling that, that's like prequel to Tales of the Empire.
As a historian, I really usually like to get my stuff together.
Yeah, I was not... I was not feeling that.
Though I guess as a historian too, there's always like the, oh, I want to talk about the French Revolution. And it's like, okay, well, let's go back to Roman times.
The only redeeming quality of this was that it was 15 minutes long.
Have you heard of a man named Charlemagne? Yes, 15 minutes long. Very good. Very good.
Let's go back to fantasy baseball for a second before we get into... Baseball. TGFBI, Little progress from both of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You're up to 352. That's from the bottom of the barrel to
first of all, coming, moving up 50 spots in 2 weeks, anywhere you are in the rankings is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. Very, very good. And I'm up to 131. Willy Adames, old friend, deciding to finally do something.
I think mainly what I see happening here is that we have actually executed our appointed game plans.
Yeah, sort of.
Did you not execute your appointed game plan?
Oh, well, yes. But then having Framber Valdez decided, like, hey, you know what? I'm actually going to suck.
that's because you said on the pod, I'm putting it all on Framber Valdez.
Like, I feel pretty good about having Framber Valdez as my ace.
Oh man, yeah, that was on you. Well, another thing that came that worked was my coming home to roost, my success with the fact that I sat on Pete Crow Armstrong for the first month of the season.
Oh, hey. Nice. He actually hit a home run finally, right?
He had a home run. He had 2 stolen bases this past week.
Nice.
Which is quite a good chunk of my stolen base total at this point. I also benefited from a surprise save from Yennier Cano after Kimbrel is perhaps imploding.
If Kimbrel is Kimbreling,
He's about to get sent up with something. Okay, my pickup of the week is Mitchell Parker. Anything come across your transom with him?
I do not. Who is Mitchell Parker?
He is a Nationals semi-prospect, 24 years old. He probably won't be up for very long. But I had Shelby Miller on my team still. And you know who I don't need on my team?
Shelby Miller.
Bingo. Yeah. All right, let's get into this today.
All right. We have been working on creating a wins model. And this was supposed to be a little teeny tiny thing that we would do that would be helpful for, hey, is a starting pitcher more or less likely to win this game? And then, hey, what's the kind of team quality that we have here with this team? And then sort of like, hey, how could team quality sort of affect the players on this team? And we've gotten into this wins modeling game. And Mike has put together a pretty good run differential based model for predicting wins. Now, he's presented it. And one of the big caveats we keep on saying is, hey, but is this any better than just looking at the betting lines?
Mm.
And we said, well, this is fun because we're going off of first principles here. We're developing our own model to incorporate what we want. And then we always have this caveat of, well, what if we were just looking at the betting lines? I decided to take the plunge and take a look and see if I could scrape a known gambling betting line setting place. And some success. And I should say, Bowtied Better, whose avatar looks like a mean Bojack Horseman, has a thing online, and I just kind of stole it. No, I'm sorry. I didn't steal it. It was online. It was in the public domain. So I'm copying it and using this to see if I can bring down betting lines from DraftKings.
It's Better, B-E-T-T-O-R. Wow, it really is. They have their whole own website.
Yep.
Mean Bojack is an excellent...
Mean Bojack.
Excellent description of this. Wow, you can subscribe to the Substack.
Yeah, there's a lot. There are a lot of site packages out there that are for getting lines. And you know what I don't want to do? I don't want to pip install random betting thing. But going from source, this was able... So he's got a little tutorial in there to grab from DraftKings JSON betting lines. There's like there's an HTML scrape you can do. And this is exactly what I was hoping for.
Look at that.
Now, I've taken that script. It goes to DraftKings, creates a JSON of all of the betting lines for today for the MLB. We could grab NHL, NFL, NBA and things, but right now we're just looking at MLB. And then I have also taken in, I integrated it with the MLB predictions library that we have. And so it goes in and it grabs our predictions, the CSV of our predictions. It queries down to today, because all I have right now is today's line. Queries down to those, and then it
grabs from the games JSON, the betting line games JSON, combines those two tables together with a little bit of help from a dictionary to translate. It works for all of the... They have it formatted, so it's like the two or three character of the city, and then it has the name. And that works except for in the Los Angeles, Chicago, New York. And so there is a dictionary of if team in list of those cities, then here's a...
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Fun.
And now what I've done is one of the difficulties here that we had was the way that the bets are posted. In the JSON comes in, so they're different. Of course, number one is that there are different things that you can bet on, like the over under,
right?
For and so you have to parse out the money line. The money line has odds for both the team, and so we're workshopping to try to get this correct. Today, the Miami Marlins are playing Los Angeles Dodgers. The odds for Miami are 3.25. The odds for the Dodgers are 1.9, and we have in the MLB predictor, we have what's the percent chance that they're going to win? And so,
yeah, the logical thing to have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we had to convert the odds. Do you want to explain that, like, for us, how that works?
Yeah. I mean, the annoying part is that this is always going to be an approximation at best, right? Because the challenge with lines happening behind the scenes is that A, the house takes a cut, and B, the lines are semi-adaptive based on how many people have bet on one side or the other. So they're not exactly a pure representation of what you think the win total is going to be, for example, right? Or what you think the win percentage is going to be. But we're going to just ignore that because, by and large, we're trying to use this as a filter to say where our predictions are out of line with the gambling lines, right? With the conventional wisdom. So all we're going to try and do is approximate this as the, you're going to do 100% minus the minus whatever team you're interested in gambling line divided by the sum of the two money lines. So in this particular case, you're talking about 100% minus Dodgers line divided by Marlins line plus Dodgers line. And that is going to be the rough translation to a percentage. So what is that? I should have done that live on the fly. It's got to be pretty good though.
705,
and ours is 707, right?
Yep.
Okay,
so we are a little bit more sure that the Dodgers are going to win than even the betting.
Yeah, public. That's definitely statistically significant, right?
No. Okay, so PredDF takes the predictions that you had, so which includes the date, home team full, home team odds, away team full, away team, away teams, and then I've add, and then you've got the mean run differential. Now I've also got DK, not Donkey Kong, DraftKings. All right, so I think the biggest difference is home team odds. Oakland, we say 573. I guess what? That 57% chance that Oakland is going to win. The betting market says it's 44.9. Everyone's off of the Athletics.
Yeah, this is a case where I think it's... I mean, I understand where people are... I understand where people are coming from. But also, this is where a case where I would say that you should look at the quality line in ours. The Athletics have been much, much, much better recently than you think. They have been winning games. They put up 20 runs on somebody. Was that them?
Oh yeah, didn't they? Yeah.
Last week they put up 20 runs. I mean, we have to get over this thing of thinking that they're really bad because they're currently a 500 team. They're just bizarrely not as bad as you think they are. And it is. I mean, this is a case where I really think it's people's preconceived notion is setting what the value is, and they look at World Series champions versus a team that has sold every asset that's not nailed down and is 1 foot out the door of the town that they're in, has no interest in investing in their team. I mean, and they just think, well, obviously Texas is going to run away with this. And we look coolly at the numbers and say, Oakland's been scoring a lot of runs lately.
Wow, that really... So 2.14. Yeah. I mean, this, it seems like this is sense. We are heavily on it.
But I mean, but to be clear, we're heavily on Oakland in the sense that it's like a 60-40 thing, right? So don't get mad at us when Oakland loses tonight, because it's still there's still a 40% chance that they lose.
We're flipping from a 60 we're flipping from 40-60 that they'll win to a 60-40 that they'll win.
Yeah, exactly. So we have to be a little careful. You have to be a little careful here when you interpret what we say here. I mean, by and large, you don't end up with a larger split than the Los Angeles Dodgers playing the Miami Marlins. Right?
That's about as big as we see, right? Ones in the 700s are.
But it should reflect what you think the final dispersion in the MLB will be. And it's like, you never see a team that's more than has a record better than 700, and you never see a team that's got a record worse than 300. So you shouldn't ever be like more sure that teams are going to win than that. Baseball is just true. There's true, so true. Much at the margin that happens.
So how do we go from here? I can commit this.
Yeah.
What this will do, if you take a look, this, if you want to try to add it to the automation.
I'm going to. I need to.
This, you'll just have to run, you can add. I'll commit this script. You can change it so that it'll run automatically. You can change it, all my logic, whatever. This will save out the DK, a DK CSV. It doesn't save out the combined data frame that I'm here, the predictions, just because I'd be duplicating. But if we can start tracking this, here we go. This is what the betting line said as of 5 o'clock in the morning, the day of the game. Then we can see. I think I want to see three different things. One, is our model close enough to the betting lines that, like, okay, well, we can just, yeah, we're extrapolating out for a week, which is awesome, compared to what the betting lines have, which is today.
Do the betting lines only ever have today? You can't bet on a future. You can't get access to tomorrow's game or something through DraftKings?
In the way that I've pulled it right now, no. Fine. So I don't know if that's a limitation on the way that I tried to get something that pulled lines from today.
That's awesome. It did. Yeah. No.
You know, so that didn't fit the requirements until after I was finished and was like, you know what would be nice is if I was looking at further than just today.
I mean, there are sub-trends that I'm really keen to look at. I think I'm viewing this as a data science project in the sense that we have the money line. We talked about the money line, but there's other things that are available too. Like, I'm actually intrigued by the over-under line, and I'm intrigued by what they set the run differential line to be effectively, right? Because they're effectively telling us what they think that they're effectively predicting what they think the run differential should be between these teams.
Yeah. Not only is it going to be, not only are the Dodgers going to win, but they are likely to. 9? That's the.
Wow.
The total is 9.
Okay.
I guess. And they think that they're going to win by.
Only 1.5. Isn't that? No. Yeah, 1.5.
I think that's right.
That's less than I would have thought. But I think that's the kind of thing that I'm interested in looking at is, is there any other information that we can glean out of this? And what does that tell us about edge cases in our model? Because as you said at the start, rightly so, our model is very simple. It's predicated just on the fact that there is clearly a relationship between run differential and odds that you're going to win. But there's so many other things that we could do around that. The one place that I'd love to use this would be to tell us if a starting pitcher prediction is correction is really needed. We're not applying that right now.
Yeah.
The betting lines are obviously applying that, right?
Yeah. Oh, Corbin Burns is pitching today. Oh, yeah. So Baltimore has an even higher chance of winning.
Right. And we are not accounting for that at all right now.
Yeah. And if we could get that information in, like just even seeing, does it matter? Right?
Right.
Does it help knowing who the lineup is, or even other things? It might be like, ooh, Cody Bellinger went down and is on the IL. That affects them.
Right. And similar to our MLB predictions, our player predictions in general, we are reacting to all the past data. We have no sense of what's going on today. So somebody hits the IL, we're stuck. We have to let it run for 2 more weeks before we're aware that person's on the IL, you know?
Right. The machinery, it takes the 2 weeks. It's like, you know what? Something changed.
Yeah. Like Mike Trout to the IL should clearly affect our Angels lines. It's not in there yet. Maybe it's headed that way.
No, it's not. Wow, who could have seen that coming?
Oh, I know. It's like my shock that Byron Buxton has hit the IL.
Well, it's, you know, it's fun. He's got a buddy now to hit the IL with Royce Lewis. So the two of them can go up and down together.
I know. It's
it's really frustrating, isn't it?
Can we bet on that? can we find the odds that Buxton's up for, you know, like Buxton goes down this game? Yeah, so I'm really excited to scrape this over some time, look at that. I think I'll probably set this up. I'd be curious to know what you think about setting this up for a multiple day sampling, because one thing that I am curious about is I'm curious just in general about whether the lines change leading up to a game.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious to know, like, sort of the time scale of cadence for these changing. Because that kind of that for fantasy purposes in a daily league, you obviously want to have the information that's as close to your lineup lock time as possible, right? Because that's when you have the maximum information. And so I'd be curious about seeing, okay, well, today I have a busy day at work because we have regular jobs and I need to set my lineup at 9 a.m. Eastern. Am I really shooting myself in the foot? Do I have to look later? Is there something I can do to predict what I would do later? I mean, I think there's just a lot of directions that we can take this.
There are tons. It's so fun.
New data stream unlocked. I mean, anytime you unlock a new data stream, there's just a lot going on.
All right, let's see. I'm pushing. Does it work? Ha ha! Pushed.
This guy. I'm going to try and switch it so that the bot belongs to Fantasy Tools instead of me, because I'm just doing like tons of GitHub updates every day now.
Hard to find them. Yeah.
Can I switch the? Oh, yeah. Can fine. I make it so that the bot actually does this? That's my new goal. I don't actually know how to do that. So
I don't. Yeah. I don't know. I tried to do that and it's like, this is too much for me. Wow. I think that about brings us to the review session. Paul Sewald.
We are on an unbelievable streak of injured guys.
No, this is par for the course. But this is what's to be expected in pitcher analysis in 2024. He hasn't played a game.
He has not played a game. That's what I was leading to. So I'm just going to give you his 2023 stats, I guess, and attempt to tell you why he was drafted here why he was drafted relatively early. Okay, so 2023, he's got a 3.12 ERA, 1.15 WHIP. He appears in 65 games. Over that, he pitches 60.2 innings. 80 strikeouts in that. It's a pretty good ratio. And 34 saves. And that is why he was drafted as a closer. as a valuable closer this year.
Yeah, on a team that went to the World Series.
After not starting with them, right? So he was a trade deadline trade. This is the thing that we talked about at length last year, right? Because I was sitting on Munoz for the Mariners and hoping, please give him a shot. And the Mariners were insisting, we're going to do Sewald. Little did we know, it's because they were trying to sell him.
No, but it wasn't even like he was the clear number one. We have the intro with the fire and everything. He was a closer, but he was the lead in the closer by committee.
I mean, yes and no, in the sense that he got basically all of their saves.
Sure. But
He was not good in the playoffs last year, huh?
He was,
5.4 ERA across, he pitched in 10 games. I mean, this should, again, maybe this is a thing that should set off alarm bells for us as closers, right? He pitches in 10 high leverage games late into what would normally be a winter. He doesn't do that well. And he throws hard, right? Yeah, no, he doesn't throw that hard.
Well, that was Kimbrel after that run the Red Sox had. It was like, that was it for him.
But if you think that 60 innings is standard closer, and then he pitches 10 more innings in the postseason, that's a big boost, right? I mean, for a starter, it's like, okay, you pitch 10 more innings, whatever. For a closer, it's like, that's all nearing 20% of your total.
Right. It is. It's a lot of pitching that they put on them, and especially the way that the playoff games go now.
Yeah.
It's extra. Yeah, I think that's been hurting a lot of elite relief pitchers over the last couple of years.
I mean, to be clear, it didn't affect Joe Andurin last year, but it didn't affect the fact that Joe Andurin, who we reviewed last week, hadn't played a game yet.
You mean the two games?
The extra two games. I don't think that didn't really matter for them. But
But he was hurt. So, yeah. So hey.
Okay, so he's out with a left oblique strain, which is just not an injury that you like. Happened during spring training.
Mm-hmm.
So he's out on a rehab assignment right now. That's something.
I haven't felt anything in 10 days now, Sewold said on 5/6/2024. So that's today. Or that was reported today. Hey, I mean, he might come back and be effective for that team.
Well, certainly.
Will he have a job?
He's going to have a job, right? I mean, who's closing in Atlanta right now?
Not Atlanta.
In Arizona.
Arizona.
A teams. Yeah. Ginkle, right, is the Diamondbacks closer right now. That is not a safe position. They're going to slot Sewold right back in.
Yeah, one would think so.
But, I mean, Sewold looks dangerous as a closer in the sense that he is two pitches, and one of them tops out at 92.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a 92 mile an hour four-seam fastball and an 84 mile an hour sweeper.
The thing about him is 2 years ago, I was really excited for him. Not 2 years ago. 3 years ago in that 2021 season and coming into the 2022, I was really excited for him because it's like, you know what? This guy has something. A lot of the analysis that I did would bring him up and say, hey, you know, Sewold looks pretty good. And maybe that's the diminished role he had. He was more effective. But yeah, now once he's in the full-time job, it doesn't seem like he can really do that. He's better as the setup guy who then is in the wings and is 1B closer.
Well, sure. I mean, you look at his 2021 stats, 104 Ks in 64 innings. Right. I mean, that's like
he was in middle relief. Yeah. He was in those kind of places where it's like, yeah, strikeouts just happen.
Well, that 2021 season is what you're always hoping for the perfect Bastardo season. Right. It's like he got a few saves. He had an ERA that didn't hurt you. He pitched 60 innings. He got 104 Ks in that. He returned
10 wins.
Yeah. 10 wins. He returned you like starter numbers almost.
Yeah. He had 10 wins plus saves. That's huge.
No. He had 20 wins plus saves.
I'm sorry, 21. He had 21 wins plus saves. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's like, wow, that is like the blueprint for what you want for a TGFBI season.
Yeah.
And then he's never gotten close to that again, right? 72 Ks in 64 innings, 80 Ks in 60 innings. I mean, and the
scouting report has been written for Paul.
Yeah, and it's an easier scouting report when he's only got two pitches. Was he doing something different in 90 in 2001? No, he was doing the exact same thing.
2021. Yeah, it's just people hadn't seen it, didn't know it was coming.
He's doing the exact same thing. A lot of the same stuff. I mean, he does still have a high whiff percentage, so he is really a precision pitcher.
Yeah, does he have pretty good control? I mean, that combo is pretty fun, the two pitches, if you're watching him.
Well, in 2021, he induced a crazy number of whiffs. And the same thing is true in 2022. And then that dropped last year. But he still had sterling Ks. I mean, to some extent, the proof is going to be in the pudding.
Was he already hurt?
Right. The proof is going to be in the pudding. We need to see him. No, because he hurt himself in spring training.
The ball comes out at a weird angle from him.
Yeah. That's how you tweak your oblique.
Maybe. Let's do it. Nice. Yeah, it just comes out at an angle. Looks like it's coming faster than it really is. So we'll see if he comes back. Would you trade for him right now? Good IL stash right now.
Right now? Yeah, right now I would totally trade for him. I assume, especially if the team that he's, especially if the owner of the team that he's on needs pieces to win now.
Yeah.
This is a great move. If you could get him for what the Mariners traded to the Diamondbacks to get him, which was Josh Rojas, was essentially the centerpiece of the deal, do it.
Yeah.
Please go out there. If you're the Josh Rojas owner, go out and offer for Paul Sewold straight up. See what happens.
Yeah. That's a good one. All right. Who are we doing next week?
Well, next week, Evan Phillips.
All right.
Currently of IL fame.
Yep. Time for a little housekeeping. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter, Fantasy Tools, Mind the Z. Thank you, Mild Manor, for letting us use your tunes. Be sure to follow them on SoundCloud and Facebook. Feel free to email us with questions or comments. Send us messages at fantasy.tools@gmail.com. Again, Mind the Z. All I've got left is, worst of luck to you, buddy.
Worst of luck to you, too. Yeah!
you say?